Welcome to America Weekend.
America Weekend.
And I got the sunshine and the blue sky up above. I got the black top under my wheels. And I got big dreams. And I got people that I love. And there ain't nothing wrong. I got a good day going on.
Good day. Time is 7 after the hour. Welcome to the Good Day program with Doug Steffen, Roberta Fasanelli, Jennifer Horn, and Rich McFadden with Ken Kessler. We're here at your service to talk about what America... Well, if you're looking for a really sage radio program with information as it applies to sanctuary cities, I don't know that I've ever heard or had a conversation with anybody about so-called sanctuary cities. And yet, with the shooting in San Francisco last week, of this woman, the FBI gun, the guy who actually picked the gun up, somebody who'd been deported 5 times, and he keeps coming back to San Francisco because
he knows
he's safe there. How many other cities, Kenny and Jennifer, in California alone?
33.
There are 33 sanctuary cities.
Yes, although 3 of them, I think, try to say that they're not. They're disputing it. Montebello,
really?
Cypress... have disputed it. Fresno disputes it. But yes, San Diego, San Francisco, Los Angeles, San Jose, Santa Cruz, Sonoma, Wilmington, Long Beach, Linwood. I mean, a whole list.
Okay, so Berkeley. What does it mean to be a sanctuary city? What does that entail?
It means when you get in trouble and you go to jail and you're released, you can go right back out on the streets. Typically, cities are supposed to deport once you get out of prison for something. So This means that these guys know they're up to criminal behavior. They know they're going to commit crimes and that they could be jailed. They don't want to have to deal with deportation, so they go do it in their sanctuary cities.
So you're talking specifically about illegal aliens here?
Yes.
Yes.
Right.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah, is that
the term generally applies to cities that do not allow municipal funds or resources to be used to enforce federal immigration laws, usually by not allowing the police or municipal employees to inquire about an individual's immigration status.
So this would be a formalized vote by a city council, it would seem, to say we will give harbor, will give support to those people who are here illegally. If I knew that was going on in my city, I'd refuse to pay my taxes and let them take me to court.
Is that the actual wording, or is this just a secondary what is happening because of the law?
It's a summary. Did they pass the
law for that reason, or it's just that they didn't want to spend funds, and this is just
I think they think it's the right thing to do from who knows what the reasoning is. But I will tell you, the hypocrisy with San Francisco is that Dianne Feinstein was mayor of San Francisco for many years, and she was part of this development of San Francisco as a sanctuary city. Now she's out in the last couple of days talking about how it's ridiculous. We have to get rid of these sanctuary cities. And there's a lot of hypocrisy now because people feel like they have blood on their hands with these politicians. Gavin Newsom is another one in San Francisco that has supported it. He was the former mayor. So there's, you know, you have these people going, okay, this is a great idea. Well, we're trying to encourage these guys to come here and vote. But now, you know, oops, somebody dies. And now everybody's running the other way.
Wow. So, check this out, Doug. The Center for Immigration Studies has a map of sanctuary cities in the United States.
Okay.
Take a whack. How many sanctuary cities there are in the country?
Hundreds.
How many hundreds?
400?
200 cities.
This picture is so skewed and cockeyed. Do not waste our time talking about them because nothing gets done. Why don't we just go on to something? I want to go back to something, as a matter of fact, that we were talking about before you arrived on the scene, Roberta.
Okay.
Story that I couched in sort of brackets. The story about a police officer who helped a mother of 5. She has 5 children, teenagers down to being 2 years old, twins. Her husband was killed. She has no money, lost her house. Everybody's living in the car. She has nothing. So she goes into a Walmart and she steals diapers and shoes and dresses and stuff and walks out and she gets caught. So Walmart calls the police. The policeman shows up and feels sorry for these folks. So he brings the girls into the store and he buys them shoes and a dress and things that they need. And so I'm musing about this, thinking how great is the policeman when everybody else on the team here said, well, why didn't Walmart step up? Or what my question was, and I don't know whether you think I had the right spin on this or not, and none of you really said anything, but you may not have had time to, whether this is a lesson you're going to teach these five girls that the only way for you to survive is to be a thief. How do you play it further ahead? How do you get them whatever they want in the future? And is it something that if we're not helping these people, we feel badly about it? excuse me, I'm sorry. Going backwards, how many children you have, you didn't plan on the husband dying, so you got to, you know, give that a little bit of room. Did they have any insurance on the husband? Give me your tired, your poor huddled masses. I'm sort of thinking about that. But most people in this country don't plan ahead. Most people don't have any money. Most people work from week to week, don't they? Many people do, anyway. And so under this circumstance, what's the right... I'm kind of confused. I confuse myself. What's the right approach?
Five kids living in a car is something for Child Protective Services. That's not a safe environment for a child.
Oh, well, but that's bringing the government into it. I'm tired of the government.
It's not the right environment for a child.
Well, why does it have to be the government? Why can't it be a church or some... Yeah, go ahead, Jen.
Because you know what? There are shelters that sit empty because people don't go to them and use them. And I live in an area where there's a lot of homeless people. And I have seen that there are the shelters and the churches in my area that will take these people in. Yeah. They sit open night after night.
Yeah.
Why? I mean, I think that would probably be the first thing I would think of if I were down and out. I mean, try to find some shelter where people can, you know, where your kids can use a bathroom. I mean, it's really bizarre.
All right. It is kind of bizarre. All right. Well, let's table this because I want to get to this lady who's here to focus on what's going on in Pluto. Pluto readies for a close-up. NASA's working on the job. Dr. Lisa Hardaway will join us in a moment to tell us what to expect here on Good Day.
Welcome to American Biker Minute, one of the hardest to find Harleys. In 1977, the production numbers of 299 units alone made the bike unique. This motorcycle seriously flew the red flag on the gas tank. Today on American Biker Minute.
The Movie Man 6-second DVD review starts now.
Ex Machina is a smart, cool, stylish, great-looking movie. Hashtag sexy robot, the mate!
6-second reviews are brought to you by Marvel's Ant-Man. Now play.
Jeff Ryan for American Biker Minute. ABM can remember the uproar in the late 70s over the introduction of Harley's most controversial motorcycle ever, the Confederate. The 997cc model sold with an MSRP of $3,127, a seven banger, which if perfect, brings 20 large. Owing to Southern Rock, the Confederate flag on the gas tank was less of an impediment to sales than outright poor quality in construction from bowling ball manufacturer AMF. American Biker Minute, your passport to the open road on two wheels.
Big success in a minute with George and Mary Lynn.
Work-life balance remains elusive for many professionals today. How can you get a little more downtime even when you're super busy?
Look in your pockets. This tip comes from Jacqueline Smith with Forbes. We all have little pockets of personal time throughout the day.
Make the most of them to avoid burnout and enjoy the moments of your life.
For example, you can daydream on your commute to and from work. Give your mind a little break by letting it wander where it wants.
When the weather's nice, why not take 5 minutes between projects to get out of the building and go for a walk?
Focus on nature's beauty. Take in the sights, the sounds, and the smells.
So pick your own pockets for your big success.
Find big success at BIGGSuccess.com.
The Movie Man 6-second DVD review starts now.
Ex Machina is a smart, cool, stylish, great-looking movie. Hashtag sexy robot, the mate!
6-second reviews are brought to you by Marvel's Ant-Man. Now play.
Now, cheap psych tricks with Dr. Buff.
And Dr. Buff here. Did you know that your music choices speak volumes about your personality? Here's what your musical tastes say about you and, of course, the social science of it. Is country music your favorite? Well, you're athletic and reliable. Are you into rock? You're social but easily stressed. Is pop your thing? Well, you're friendly but sometimes have difficulty getting your point across. Are you a classical music lover? You're reflective and complex with a gift for language. Finally, jazz. You got it all. You're outgoing, social. You're easy to talk to. What's the cheap psychological trick? Well, humans use all sorts of Facebook-esque things, you know, like music, movies, and books to help us predict another's personality. But get this, these superficial things cannot predict emotional stability. That you gotta find out the hard way. Got a question? Send it to me at drbuff.com.
Don't complain about your cable bill going up and up and up. Do something about it. Grab a pencil and jot down this special number.
Call 888-359-MY-TV.
Dr. Lisa Hardaway joins us here on Good Day, program manager specializing in scientific instruments for Ball Aerospace and Technologies. She's waited 9 years to see the results of her work for the RALPH instrument aboard the New Horizons mission to Pluto. RALPH as in Alice and RALPH to the moon, right, Dr. Hardaway?
That's correct, Doug.
Yeah. So what was your role? Tell us what you did.
I was, for a while, most of the time, the lead systems engineer, lead designer for the RALPH instrument.
What does that mean? What did you do? What did you come up with?
So it's kind of my role to make sure all the different systems work together and speak together and make sure the whole instrument as a whole is meeting the requirements of the mission.
RALPH is the eyes of the mission?
Correct, yeah.
And as such, is there a brain? This whole thing only weighs 24 pounds. So when you think about it, there's a brain. There are eyes. Is there an ear to this as well? Can we hear?
Not through the RALPH instrument, but it does have a brain. It does have electronics associated with it. So once the eyes see what's going on, it filters all the information back to the brain, and the brain tells us what it's looking at.
All right, so this spacecraft is going to fly by this week, fly by Pluto, and see what? What are we going to see back?
Well, we don't completely know. That's partly why we're going. We expect to see a little bit about the ground geology, understand a little bit more about the atmospheric structure. And as we go past, we'll be slewing the spacecraft backwards so that we're taking images even as we leave the system.
So you helped develop, or you did develop, RALPH's eyes and the brain. What did you do as a kid? What did you do for fun? I want to know how you your brain develops into somebody who can figure this out.
I just always loved space and what's out there, and this is the perfect mission for me because we know so little about Pluto and Charon and all the other icy objects out there that we're going to be learning a lot of new information.
And what will we use that information for?
There'll be a lot of different things. First, just to explore the third section of the solar system where the icy worlds are, the Kuiper Belt. We're hoping that we'll find out a little bit more about our own Earth. It'll probably tell us a little bit how Earth was formed way back when.
How many moons does Pluto have?
As of right now, we know of five.
Five moons.
Five more.
How do moons come to be?
From a variety of different methods. One of the main ones is that the gravity of the planet or the object kind of sucks in another object, and then it goes into orbit around the first object. So part of what we're out there to find is if this is what happened or if maybe it was a piece of Pluto that broke off.
Mm-hmm. It really is amazing, the timing of this. This is information you get back in seconds, right?
Yes.
After the picture is taken, how long does it take for that info to be relayed back to your headquarters?
Well, it takes 4.5 hours for the data to get to Earth, and then from there it has to go through some post-processing. We just get the raw data, so it's kind of like developing the film.
That's amazing.
And then
how does it travel faster than light?
This spacecraft is about the size of a grand piano, and it was put on the largest rocket that the United States has, and we added 5 boosters to it, so it is flying pretty fast.
I mean, the information, though.
How does the information get back faster, as fast as it does? What sort of energy is in this 24-pound object to send it back this quickly?
Well, actually, that is going to come back to the spacecraft itself. It's got a fairly large antenna dish on it, and so that will send it all back.
It's fascinating. This week,
amazing.
New Horizons spacecraft going by Pluto. Thank you, Dr. Hardaway. Congratulations for having such a big brain. Good to have you here on Good Day.